So let's take it back. You know, you mentioned your childhood, you know, the book being called The Cotton Picker. So that's where you come from, huh?
Yeah, the cotton fields. We were all born into the cotton fields, and it was hard work. But not only the work itself was hard, the environment, the no facilities, right. You know, the working conditions, the pay, $1.50 for 100 pounds of cotton.
Right.
You know, everything. The one thing that was positive about those days was that the family was together.
Very true.
And it was a workforce. Mm-hmm. And we're all always together. And that was a positive thing. But
right.
But having to work under those conditions and the atmosphere of the KKK being so prevalent.
Right.
They literally met a few miles down from my hometown. I was looking at a book about my hometown Temple.
Right.
And it says in there, Midway, which is between Temple and Belton, which is 8 miles apart.
Right.
Well, Midway, before 4 miles in between, mm-hmm. there was a clubhouse, and it mentioned there they had these kinds of meetings and that, and that's where the KKK would meet.
Wow.
So I grew up dealing with all that racism,
right.
Physically fighting, you know, with the little white kids, and you know, and I keep saying, those scars from the fight will go away in 2-3 days, a black eye or whatever.
Right.
But the emotional scars will never leave.
Oh, no.
Because when you're a little boy and you have grown-ups cursing you out and telling you, dirty Mexican, go back from where you came from.
Right.
A grown-up, you know.
Right.
What can you do?
Right.
And that stays with you for life, you know.
Very true.
And I talk about all that in the book, and I explain, you know. But you know what? I also say, for every 100 racist Anglos that, and basically they were the city Anglos for the most part.
Right.
The country people were just amiable, you know.
Right.
With
right.
us, they were just wonderful, and it was the city that was mostly the racist, you know. But for every 100, you know, bad, ugly racism type of Anglo that I had to be confronting with, one white kid that befriended me and accepted me and us as
right.
we were, and there were many of them, but
right.
but for every one of those, it erased all the ugliness.
Oh, of course, right.
All
right.
the ugliness right. ugliness of the racism thing.
Right.
Because that one kid melted away all that ugly thoughts that came to us from the adversity of the
right.
racism. That one kid was just like us and hung around with us and treated us just
right.
like them, and we rejoiced in their friendships.
Of
know?
Course, of course.
But so the book starts out. Actually, the book starts out talking about when my parents crossed over.
Oh, okay.
Separately with mm-hmm. their families when they were kids during the revolution. My mother's father, Jose Maria de Leon, whom Little Joe was named after, was a colonel with Pancho Villa.
Wow.
And
wow.
The first picture, the book has 162 photos in there. And the first photo that you'll see is of my grandfather on horseback with his army, soldiers,
mm-hmm.
and behind the horses, the cavalry, is the train cars. And on top of them sitting are the rest of the soldiers with the dressed
wow.
in white
yeah.
with those straw hats that are real high
oh, yeah.
and pointed. Excuse me, and the carrieras, the cross.
Right, you know, estilo campesino.
Campesino.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd think it's a picture of Pancho Villa.
Right,
and his
right.
army. So I talk about them crossing over into the Central Texas Sneed Ranch. And as they grew up, they met each other. And I talk about how they met my father saw mom at a 16th of September, and she was a queen, and that was it. And he had befriended a tall guy, mm-hmm. like 6'4", and Pop was like 5'6", 5'7", maybe.
Right.
And Mutt and Jeff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good friends, and they each had a sister. And my father told his friend, Felipe, who raised his family here in Austin. They moved to Austin. He said, you know what? I'm going to steal your sister. And Felipe told Pop, well, I'm going to steal yours. And they did. And it became a huge family, you know. So they crossed over and grew up in the ranches in Central Texas.
Right, right.
They actually remember seeing, even though slavery was over, technically, but they actually see, when they were kids, they saw slaves, you know, crossing from one end of the their area to another, who were known to be slaves, you know. When mom and pop went to sign up at elementary school, they were physically thrown out.
Wow.
So they didn't get an education.
Right.
You know. And that's where I come from.
Right.
You know. So when I was thinking about writing the book, you know, I thought about a lot of things. But the one thing that stuck to me was the cotton picker, because that's what I am.
Right.
Who grew up to do other things.
Right.
You know, but the cotton picker and an Odyssey, you know.
Right.
And there was also another reason that influenced me to write that title. And I say that proudly because it's one of my favorite actors who's also Sagittarius, Kirk Douglas.
Uh-huh.
You know. And he had a similar story growing up dirt poor.
Right.
Even poorer than we were.
Mm-hmm.
And his father would go around picking up clothes that had been given away to the poor and all of that. And he'd clean them up, you know, wash them and have them cleaned up. And,
right, right.
And then he'd go out and sell them, you know. And Kirk Douglas called his book The Rag Man's Son.
You know, got you.
The father would pick up the rags and clean them up and go sell them. And that stayed with me.
Right.
So I decided to call mine the cotton picker, you know.
And
an Odyssey.
So you have experience with back in the day when Hispanics, Mexicans would get in trouble for speaking Spanish in public.
Oh, yeah.
And did that limit your wanting to go to school in that environment?
That was part of what limited it. You know, I really hate to say this, but me going to school every day, I looked at it like going to the jail or the pen.
I mean,
I was traumatized.
Because all of the oppression, yeah. I guess, yeah. that you felt.
I'm going with hand-me-downs, holes in my shoes, you know, and all kinds of things that the little kids would make fun of.
Right.
I write about in my book an incident where we used to always take our lunch and eat out, you know, at the little grocery store.
Right.
At tacos and stuff like that. But when it rained, we had to eat in the cafeteria. It was elementary, you know. And we couldn't afford to pay for the cafeteria food, you know. And sometimes mom would make us, instead of the tortilla taco, she'd make homemade bread and put the beans in there, you know. And it was the first time the white kids saw that, they started laughing at me, you know.
Right.
So it was so, God, you know, embarrassing and humiliating. But on the one hand, on my side, but so horrible that I had to feel like that because of the way those kids were.
Right.
That I would take the brown bag and put my hand inside and pull up the sandwich and take a bite without taking it out.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
So that they wouldn't see it. And they would be laughing at me. So, yes, I hated going to school. And I tried to understand, you know, what was being taught, but I couldn't, you know.
There was too many barriers there.
Too many barriers. And I luckily had some really good, wonderful teachers that could sense all of this.
Right.
You know, and went the extra mile to try to get me to understand things, you know.
Right.
But, you know, my first grade teacher, when I first went, when I actually went to school, because they tried to send me, and you'll read about it in the book, they tried to send me to school, and I wasn't ready, so they sent me home. But that's another story.
Right.
When I first finally went to Reagan School there in Temple, Miss Sheffing, I'll never forget her. She reminded me of my aunts mm-hmm. that I grew up with, and I mean, she's talking and I'm listening and I'm saying, what is she saying? You know? What is she talking about? I didn't understand.
Right.
But she was so loving, man, that she knew that I didn't understand anything, and she'd help give me extra help. And
right.
And then I fell the first year and got her again, and she helped me even more. And from there on, I didn't fail anymore to the ninth grade. But as I said earlier, I really didn't. I think they passed me because they wanted to look good.
Right. The quotas and stuff like that.
Quotas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because I really shouldn't have been passing, you know.
Right.
But I learned enough to communicate and you know.
Would you say that the music, your love of music and listening to American music, helped you in your education,
immensely.
Your articulation? And
immensely. What I didn't understand from the books, I picked up from the songs, you know.
Gotcha.
And then I put them together.
Right.
You know. But the music, the general market music, was a lifesaver for me in communication. And then as I grew older and I started listening to artists do interviews, mm-hmm. on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Right, right, of course.
And even since then, like listening to Sting do an interview, you know, such an intelligent gentleman, you know, and that kind of thing. You strive to learn from these people. We met, right. Johnny Mathis, you know, we met Count Basie, we met David Clayton Thomas. I talked to him 5 times, you know, on and on and on.
Right.
And you hope that a little bit of that rubs off on you,
right,
so
right.
that you can do a better job yourself, you know. And yes, my country, America, you know,
right.
definitely helped me to fit in, you know, with the American side of things.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't mean this in a bad manner, but I always say that there's 2 reasons why I'm more American, you know. One is because I'm Hispanic, and we're
right.
here first.
Right.
Indigenous, I should
right,
say.
Right, right, right.
You know. And the other one is because I'm a Texan. So that makes me more of an American.
That's right.
You know?
No, that's right.
You know?